Radio.
My Vision for Sydney, a talk by Archbishop Anthony Fisher at Theology on Tap at Le Pub in Sydney's CBD.
Happy New Year to you all. Happy New Liturgical Year. My thanks to Patrick and to the Gallagher clan and all those involved in organising tonight. Since being appointed the Archbishop of Sydney, people keep asking me what my hopes are for Sydney. What I hope for by the time I retire, God willing, in 2035. I've said that I want the Archdiocese to be one in which the gospel is preached with joy, the wisdom of our tradition mined with fidelity, the sacraments celebrated with dignity and welcome, and the seminaries, convents, and youth groups teeming with new life. A church in which our parishes and chaplaincies and educational institutions are truly centres of the new evangelisation. Our laity theologically literate and spiritually well-formed. Our outreach to the needy, effective and growing, and God glorified above all. Some people think that's pie in the sky, to hope for that by 2035. But without a dream, a vision, a destination, we can have no direction, no strategy, no purpose. So imagine, if you would with me, imagine it's 2035. The year 2035, and the church in Australia is thriving. By the 2050s, it's projected that mass attendance will have returned to the rate of 50% plus that it was at in the 1950s. It's uneven, however, with the elderly baby boomers and the Gen Xers underrepresented at church. Priests are asking, what can we do to attract older people to the congregations? Because our churches are full of young people, people under 50. And the young people wonder, what can they do to get their parents and grandparents to practice the faith? The seminaries and convents are flourishing after the late 20th century pruning. The new ecclesial movements, as well as the old ones like the Franciscans and Dominicans and Jesuits and Vinnies, are a major source of new energy. Rates of marriage, marital longevity, and family sizes are on the rise after the disastrous demaritalisation and depopulation in the previous generations. The culture of lies and death continues its perennial battle with the civilization of truth and life. But the sides are now more clearly defined, and there have been some real victories. For example, over the meaning of real marriage and over not killing the elderly and dying. There are all sorts of new groups and activities in the church which no one dreamed of back in 2014, such as the Latin Mass Charismatics, the Parliamentary Catholic Green Party, the Feminist Rosary Legion, the Gregorian Hillsong Church, and the Australian EWTN Sisters, who specialise in interactive video phone apostolate. Australia's four recognised saints, Mary MacKillop, Caroline Chisholm, Mary Galdry, and Eileen O'Connor, may soon be joined by a male or two. Perhaps the Maronite Australian men who were martyred when taking part in Australia's peacekeeping efforts in the Middle East back in the 20-teens. The year is 2035. And some of those in this pub tonight are now the leaders, reformers, and rebuilders of church and society in Australia. Prime Minister Patrick Langrell is vying with the opposition leader, Rebecca O'Shea, to see who can introduce the most pro-life, pro-love policies in government. Others are doing their best to strengthen the pro-life, pro-love culture in our academies, arts, media, and elsewhere. The goal of many engaged in public affairs is to enact the Beatitudes and to demonstrate that Australians are a compassionate, just, merciful, peacemaking people. By 2035, many of you here tonight are prominent in the professions, business, the workplace, public service, arts and sciences. You are well supported by solid Catholic professional societies and the excellent young chaplains that have emerged from our seminaries and religious houses. A well-formed Catholic conscience informs all your actions. And by that I mean the practical intellect thinking with the mind of Christ and his church, not the get out of morals free card that some called conscience back in the 20th century. Most of you are married with medium-sized families of 6 to 8 children. Ten 10% of you are priests or religious. And I'll be happy to sign you up at the end of TOT tonight. Programs promoting positive attitudes to life and love, commitment and sacrifice, to vocations to sanctity, are now an ordinary part of schooling and preeminent values of the culture. Love and responsibility segments are an ordinary part of the morning news, which you get beamed into your eyeglasses on your way to your virtual work. Catholic tertiary educational institutions, and by 2035, there are 12 Catholic universities around Australia, lead the way in this renewal of education and culture. Very significant Catholic contributions to the arts match those to the new ethically sustainable technologies. The flowering of Catholic intellectual culture has brought with it a readier acceptance of the gospel lifestyle. Catholic educational and healthcare institutions have a clearer sense of their identity and mission. They are, as a result, more popular than ever, and not only amongst Catholics. A group called CATS, Catholics Against Tyrannical Secularism, successfully argued before the High Court that it's unconstitutional for governments to fund atheistic secularism and relativism in education or other institutions more generously than they fund more religious and idealistic alternatives. And the church is happy to see a whole variety of educational and other options now within the reach of even the poorest Australians. Christians in Catholic and other universities are amongst the nation's intellectual leaders. Chaplaincy is now thoroughly integrated with the many activities of worship, reflection, and social action on campus. There's been a real flowering of new forms of mission in the universities. And the Catholic Evangelical Union is now the single largest university group. In the intellectual ferment of the university, the big issues are the theological, cosmological, and metaphysical ones. Good unis have big theology, philosophy, classics, and liberal arts departments. And these engage with the other disciplines on the big questions. Faith and reason, science and arts, science and religion are no longer counterpoised in the academy or the media, but thoroughly integrated. After all, there's no other way of dealing with the big issues of the 21st century. How are we to think of God, the world, and ourselves? How are we to achieve happiness, holiness, and the common good? What are we to consider good and true and beautiful? There are still a few Sydney pubs that don't have TOT or the like yet. But in any case, theological, ethical, and justice questions are the ordinary topics of conversation in every pub and every suburban barbie. Active as most of you are by 2035 in these good causes, your children look at you and your generation and mine and they think we're a sad old group of lukewarm hippies. Gen Z call us the Da Vinci Code Catholics, though they don't remember what on earth Da Vinci Code means. They've embraced the Catholic Renaissance in culture, liturgy, economy, and society. Since the 50th anniversary of the Second Vatican Council, way back in 2014, the actual teachings of that great council are now read and treasured, interpreted with the long sweep of Catholic tradition and the best post-Vatican II reforms. The new economy of 2035 has wound back the working week to a mere 40 hours and lowered the retirement age to 80. This allows many of the new generation to adopt daily mass, weekly confession, regular penance, Eucharistic adoration, and spiritual direction, and a rolling series of faith enrichment lectures and retreats as an ordinary part of life. While the old fogies only go to confession monthly and mass weekly, and only say five mysteries of the rosary each day, Gen Z like to say all 25 mysteries of the rosary, including the mysteries of light added by John Paul II, and the mysteries of love added by Pope Francis I. They tend to say them during traffic delays, as they are autopiloted to university in clean energy helicopter buses. How did all this happen by 2035? Well, there were many causes, and the most important was, of course, divine grace. Such good things as happen in every generation are the work of God, either alone or with us. Another factor was the sheer pace of change. What seemed back in the old days of 2014 an impossible battle, or one that would take centuries, actually happened very quickly, as so much now does. Strong and visionary church leadership helped, but above all, it was a new, more apostolic generation of young lay Catholics. Social, cultural, and spiritual renewal came as a natural reaction to the decadence that went before. People were hungry for an alternative to the consumerist agnosticism and cafeteria spiritualities. Pope Francis I called that the throwaway society, and people decided to throw away the throwaway society. Despite modernity's best efforts to inoculate people to religion by giving them small doses of dead or nearly dead religion, Augustine was proved right. The human soul is restless until it rests in God and his holy church. No one in 2035 doubts that it was World Youth Day, way back in 2008, and there's still a few old people that remember back to then. And its spin-offs, such as Theology on Tap, you learn about that in history classes. But these were catalysts for so much that is good now in 2035 Australia. That had been the biggest gathering of youth, indeed of people of any age, in the history of Australia. The biggest religious gathering, the biggest celebration of the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, and was now recognised as a turning point in our national history. Though, as is always the case with such things, few could see it at the time. When I retire in 2035, and you'll be approaching middle age, I hope and pray that some of this, at least, and other things too wonderful for me to have imagined, will have been achieved by us together under grace. If that is to happen, it will require each one of us to be doing our bit from tonight onwards. I'm delighted that Theology on Tap is doing its bit, revamped now in this new venue of Le Pub, coordinated by the Notre Dame Chaplaincy. St. Dominic, the founder of the Order of Preachers, once encountered a heretic in a pub and spent the whole night trying to talk him round and presumably drinking with him. By morning, he'd converted him to the Christian faith. Dominicans like to tell this story because it's an excuse for time spent in pubs. And that's my excuse for being so involved in at least three TOTs this year alone. Well, tonight TOT returns to the Archdiocese where it started in this country, just up Victoria Road in Drummoyne back in 2007, as Patrick reminded us. It moved west for a while, as they say, go west, young man, along Victoria Road to Parramatta. Now it's back in Sydney, or perhaps it's going to be in both. I don't know. And I don't know if it's stalking me or I'm following it. But one way or another, I'm tied up with you guys and your enthusiasm for faith and ideals. Even through the night, like St. Dominic, as you talk about these things and pray and confess and make or deepen friendships and eat, drink and be merry. That's a very Catholic cocktail. At TOT in March, when there was a lot of speculation about who would succeed Cardinal Pell, I told you to stay calm, to pray that God's will be done, and to pray that whoever is called to that service has the faith and love and courage to say yes. When the papal nuncio came knocking on my door 2 months ago, I felt deeply honoured by Pope Francis's confidence in me, excited at the new opportunities to be with you in a new way, the new ways I might serve, but more than a little daunted by the bigness of it all. Just over a week ago, I was privileged to meet him, as you see here, in Rome for the first time. He said that he was praying for me in my new mission, which he said was a big one. I said the Church of Sydney was praying for him in his mission, which is an even bigger one. It is a joy to be back in Sydney, if tinged with genuine grief at parting from Parramatta. Either way, I love this city. I grew up first around Lakemba, then Longaville. My dad's chemist shop was in Lakemba, and my schools were there and in Lane Cove and Ryde and Riverview. I studied at Sydney Uni, worked in the city, was ordained in Wurrunga. after periods in Melbourne and Oxford, they're not suburbs of Sydney. Sydney took me back for good, first as Cardinal Pell's auxiliary, as World Youth Day Bishop, as Parish Priest of Watson's Bay, then as Bishop of Parramatta, and now as Archbishop. So I've lived and worked all across this wonderful city, as Patrick pointed out, and I love its people. I think it can be one of the world's greatest cities if we make this one of the world's greatest Catholic dioceses. Sydney's first bishops were Benedictines, monks. I am a Dominican, a friar. The early Dominicans were a bit unsure about their men becoming bishops. On my installation night, I told some of you the story of the Dominican scientist theologian, St. Albert the Great, who was named Bishop of Regensburg by the Pope. When the head Dominican, Humbert of Romans, heard the news, he wrote to Al, "I'd rather you were dead than a bishop. Why ruin your reputation and that of the order by letting yourself be taken away from poverty and preaching? However troublesome you find the brethren, don't imagine it'll be better once you have the secular clergy and powers to deal with. Better to be in a coffin, better to lie in a coffin than sit in a bishop's chair." But I've decided that being Archbishop of Sydney is better than being in a coffin. At least so far. I've only been at it for 2 weeks. I believe I'm called to be a bishop who speaks the truth in love, as my Episcopal motto from St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians puts it. I'm an eternal optimist, but I'm not blind to the challenges. There have been revelations of shameful deeds of some clergy and serious failures of some leaders to respond. I personally found that harrowing as a bishop, as I've had to listen, been privileged to listen, to some of the victims tell me their stories. To hear how these survivors felt abandoned and how they continue to suffer. The church is, I am profoundly sorry for what happened. When I look at you guys and at all young people and those younger than you, I'm absolutely determined that all young people must be cherished and protected. The church can do better, and I'm committed to giving a lead in this area. I pray that our church will emerge from this period of public scrutiny and humiliation more compassionate and spiritually regenerated. Another great challenge is in the area of marriage and family life, a crucial institution so much misunderstood and under intense pressure. For example, many in our society want so-called same-sex marriage. Now, I've just come back. The reason I was in Rome and met the Pope was I was at a conference which I'd agreed to be at a year ago before I knew what was going to happen to me, called Humanum, a conference on the complementarity of man and woman. I was privileged to hear leaders from many different religions and countries around the world, including Pope Francis, speak on how important both men and women are to each other and to the raising of children. The Jewish and evangelical speakers were especially impressive. I'd strongly encourage you to Google Humanum and watch the video clips. They're really good. And then you might want to watch some of the lectures as well. But the video clips are just 15 minutes. That might be all you have time for between TOTs. Another challenge is that many no longer want to commit to anything, to anyone, to marriage or anything much. Anything which then denies them and their children the best chance for happiness. Marriage brings together the two halves of humanity and connects the generations. It's not solely about romance, but also about fidelity and self-sacrifice and comprehensive bodily, psychological, and spiritual union. Marriage and family are schools of virtue, life and love. And of course, the fruit and complement to healthy families is healthy religious life and clerical life. They stand or fall together. For these challenges to be met and these dreams to come true, what will we need? Above all, we must build upon that rock, that foundation stone, that is Jesus Christ, and the works that his Spirit has inspired in generations past in our region. Currently, the Catholic Church in the Archdiocese of Sydney has about 600,000 members, or well over a million if you include the other Sydney dioceses as well. And they are in every walk of life, contributing in myriad ways to our city and nation. How different would our city and nation be if all 1 million plus of them in Sydney alone, all 600,000 of them in this archdiocese alone, were on fire with faith and hope and love? The archdiocese has 137 parishes and hundreds of diocesan clergy and religious brothers and sisters, 6 Catholic hospitals, 115 Catholic nursing homes, 112 Catholic primary schools, 46 secondary schools, 6 combined schools, a special school and more of them on the way, serving over 83,000 kids. What a different city and nation we'd be if 83,000 kids emerged from school every few years on fire with faith and hope and love. So we have some real strengths to build on. But such numbers and institutions risk being hollowed out, soulless bureaucracies, if they are not continually renewed in faith, hope, and love. St. John Paul II called on the laity to be prophets of truth, agents of a new evangelization for a new millennium, a millennium he just glimpsed and crossed over into before going to join the saints. Pope Benedict called you to be objects of beauty, like precious gems refracting the glory of God and drawing all eyes to him. And now Pope Francis calls you to be exemplars of goodness, missionary disciples. In other words, you are called, every one of you is called to be truth, goodness, and beauty incarnate in the flesh. Our word for that is saints. Those most radical signs of human fulfillment and divine grace. You are privileged to be co-heirs with Christ, royal in dignity, priestly in service, prophetic in witness. Sainthood is for you. Sainthood is for Sydney through you. I have great faith in Sydney, great hope for Sydney, great love for Sydney. You young people are a big reason why. As Pope Francis said in his papal bull, which is not a rude way of describing things popes say that we don't like, but rather the letter by which he made me Archbishop of Sydney. In that papal bull he said, "You are spes ecclesiae." Young people, he said, are the hope of the church in Sydney. So open your hearts to the adventure of the gospel. As I said in my installation, and I wish you could have all been here and all the young people of Sydney could have been there, but our cathedral is not big enough. I can't do what needs to be done for Sydney alone. I'm depending on you, my young friends, to lend me your love and idealism, your energy and ideas. Never buy the lies that nothing is true, that all is relative, that your ideals are illusory, that your good works are in vain. With God on your side, my young friends, who can be against you? God bless you.
That was a talk by Archbishop Anthony Fisher for Theology on Tap. Theology on Tap is held at La Poque in the Sydney CBD. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.